welcome to the Dorsey Wright Podcast for Wednesday, February 22nd. I'm Tammy DeRozier.
This is Paul Keaton.
And I should start off by saying happy anniversary.
You could. I remember for my actual wedding that some of the best advice I've been given in the last 15 years was given to me, was shared to me. And it basically, the short version of it was they said, you know, the best way to remember your anniversary is to forget it just once.
There you go. I thought you were going to say, like my dad did when my brother got married, and he was giving a speech there at the reception, and he said, son, because I'd like for you to place your hand on top of your lovely wife's hand. And he said, just remember, this is the last time you'll have ever have the upper hand in marriage.
And I'm sure everyone laughed, like, oh, that's so funny.
The older people laugh because they knew how true it was.
That's right.
The younger people laugh because they just thought it was funny.
All laughing just for different reasons.
Exactly. But the anniversary theme is it seems like we here in February are coming up with a number of anniversaries for models and ETFs over the next couple of weeks. March 1st it will be the 10-year anniversary of the launch of the PDP, the first ever momentum-based ETF launched on the market, and one of the first worst days in years for the markets that day when we did the bell ringing. So, but at the same time, it's performed extremely well over that 10-year period and performed extremely well this year, which we were just looking at some of that factor rotation study about factors that do well over extended periods of time, things like momentum, buyback, low volatility. They all do well over these long 10-year, 5-year stretches. Yeah. They do extremely well. But any one particular year, you could pick it out and say, hey, that didn't do well this year.
It seems almost as though it is, an anniversary that comes right after some sort of knockdown, drag-out argument, with your spouse, because 2016 was kind of that knockdown, drag-out argument with momentum.
Yes.
And pretty much, it was a year where that factor was out of favor. And every year, one of these factors isn't going to do well. Part of that is just the nature of ranking things by relative performance. There's always going to be something that does the best and something that does the worst. And it seems like every one of these kind of these sort of top tier factors, they have their day in the sun and then they've got their other years. And last year was the first year in the past decade where momentum was the worst performing of the major factors. And however, it's a good time for a big anniversary because it gives you a chance to go back and I think and digest the fact that everything's going to do poorly at certain times, but what does well over time? And momentum certainly has a great track record for that, whether it's applied to international markets or it's applied to the domestic markets. And PDP hits its 10-year mark March 1st, as you said. But then we've got some other momentum applications that have hit similar anniversaries. The State Street Sector ETF model, which is not an ETF, but it's a guided model on our site. And it was one that we launched in 2007, in January 2007, and that it's hit its 10-year mark. And it has a great track record, and it's a great tool, illustration to use with clients to sit down and show over a big, meaty time period the value of rotating sectors and subsectors in an organized, disciplined way. And after 10 years, that's an ETF model that has nearly doubled the performance of the S&P 500 during a period of time where the S&P 500 is up more than 60%. So it's added a lot of value. And what was the other anniversary we had?
And then the other anniversary is the First Trust International model.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Is celebrating a five-year anniversary today. And, you think about really the lost decade. I mean, of international equities. We do the 12 days of Christmas every year around the holiday season. And this year we were sitting around talking about, what would we like to talk about? And one of the topics that came up was just the lost decade in international equities, because after such a huge run from 2003 to 2007 when international was on fire and just a 5% allocation to international equities in your modern portfolio theory allocation helped you tremendously outperformed the S&P 500, you know, during that decade of the 2000s. Anything you did to weight away from the S&P 500 helped you tremendously. The last decade, anything that you've done to weight away from the S&P 500 has hurt you. And so we've had this lost decade of international equities. Yet when we look at just over the last 5 years, the IFV this model is now available in an ETF format. So if we look at that over the last 5 years, it's up about over 18%. My eyes are getting old here. While you look at like the All Country World Index, it's up 6.2%. You look at VEU, it's up 6%. You look at EFA, and it's up 11%. And EEM is down 11%. So emerging markets over the last 5 years, down over 11%. And yet it shows you again, over a time period, that the benefit of rotating amongst these countries to what's the strongest and away from what is the weakest is extremely beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of interesting things that I've seen with advisors and how they use that model. And one is, you know, to use a core satellite approach, because sometimes it's difficult if you have client accounts where, you know, your investment mandates allow you to maybe invest, you know, 25% or 30% in international equities. You may not feel comfortable, or your compliance departments may not feel comfortable with big chunks of that 30% being in individual countries. Now, you may look at, you know, things like EEM and EFA, and if you look at the country weights, you might find that you have a lot of, you know, pretty high weights in some countries there. But that's beside the point. So what you often will see is some type of beta exposure put alongside some type of alpha-generating exposure. And country rotation, as we've found within international equity markets, is probably the best way. It's kind of the low-hanging fruit for alpha generation over time. And that's what models like the First Trust International model, that's how they exploit that divergence. And, you know, the reason we say low-hanging fruit is that's just – that's where you get separation. If you're not going to go buy individual, you know, 20 or 30 stocks on overseas exchanges and monitor them, then, you know, the way in which you can get a lot of that divergence is, you know, is through that country rotation. And through the country rotation, you're actually getting some of the currency influence, which adds volatility and dispersion, but it helps kind of separate the pack. You know, if you have periods where the yen is weak for 5 years relative to the euro, then, you know, that's going to contribute toward, you know, dispersion when everything's brought back into, say, U.S. dollars. That it just contributes to dispersion. And so the nice thing about relative strength is it picks all that up. It's just using price. And so if you've got a, you know, a Japan example, and then you've got, you know, a bunch of European examples in your kind of developed world, then, you know, that those currency trends, you know, aren't really working against you. They kind of help you, helping you to find the leadership trends. And so, at any rate, it's common to see someone take an international sleeve and say, well, we're going to have some of that marked to beta products to make sure we always have some emerging and some developed. Mm-hmm. And then that allows that country piece to sit next to it and kind of go where it needs to go. And it will naturally have the effect of overweighting either the developed world or the emerging world, depending on which countries are winning that relative strength battle.
Well, and if you look, you know, international equities have continued to pick up buy signals,
right,
versus other asset classes. And when we look at a relative strength chart, for instance, of the All Country World Index, so that's a blend of emerging versus developed, it is overweighted towards the developed markets, but it does kind of encompass some international there. If we look at that relative strength chart, it reversed up in August of last year, and just this month has given a relative strength buy signal, meaning that the CWI is favored over over money market. And so that's a positive sign. And that's the first time that we've seen a buy signal for that CWI since giving a sell signal in August of 2015. So a good, 18 months or so. So further validation that, maybe you want to take a little, you want to take a look at some of the international equities and have a little piece of that in there and start exploring some potential ideas there.
The biggest and the most glaring difference that remains when you're balancing the U.S. equity picture versus the international equity picture, because obviously international equities wins on every front until you get to that comparison with domestic equities. And it's been such a long time now. It has been the trend of the decade has been U.S. stocks over international stocks. And one of the ways I think that's really illustrated within the current market is through a tool that we use called cash percentile rank. And the cash percentile rank is just a way of taking a bunch of things from an asset class and kind of wedging cash into it and then saying, where would cash rank? If we considered cash a sector of the U.S. equity market, where would it stack up? Would it be kind of in the middle? Would it be at the top? Would it be at the bottom? Where would it be? And when you do that for U.S. equities, cash ranks dead last. Every single sector and subsector that we use to represent U.S. equities ranks higher than cash. Mm-hmm. And that's notable. That's not something you see that often. In fact, as we look at that today, it's not since 2014 that that's been the case where absolutely every sector and subsector beat cash. So it's not really something that happens a whole lot of the time. In fact, if you looked at the entire history of the U.S. markets going back 16, 17 years, just 3.5% of the time is that the case where cash ranks dead last. So it's not without precedent, but nor is it something that's a normal occurrence.
And it's usually a pretty good sign for the market, too, that a sign of a strong market. I remember Tommy Watson telling me, too, that when you see, the high-low index up around 90%, it's not necessarily a sign that the market's going to fall apart, but rather it's a sign of a really strong market that things are continuing to move to that things are continuing to move to new highs. I was talking to a longtime client today on the phone, and we were looking at some of these, for instance, bank stocks. And if you looked at KRE, a community bank ETF, and you see that it's up on this pole and it makes you a little nervous about buying it, but yet you look at a quarter point per box chart and get some more movement in there, there what you can see is you can clearly see that at the end of December through the first part of February, those bank stocks were just taking a breather, and now it's breaking out of this large base. You can see the same thing on a chart of Bank of America. So when you look at some of these shorter term types of things, you say, geez, the market still has further to go here. So that's one tool that you can use right now. You can make your own scales. Many of these ETFs have other scales and stocks on the side of the chart. But I will tell you, when you were talking about, everything ranking higher than cash, there is one relative strength relationship that's kind of interesting on an international basis when you say, are there any internationals outperforming the U.S.? There's one that's getting close to giving a buy signal.
Versus
the U.S. market. Yeah. You know what that is? That's the AADR index. So it's an ETF that's based on a momentum relative strength based way of ranking ADR stocks. And that is one box away from a relative strength buy signal versus the S&P 500.
And that's interesting too. Yeah, because so that's and that ETF is primarily using obviously ADRs.
Using ADRs,
and
right?
There are more. I think I did a search of our system the other day, and there were something like 700 or 800 ADRs.
Right.
I had no idea how many were available and very liquid. Traded really well. Mm-hmm. The U.S. It's very very interesting how many of those came about. Probably a lot of them, back 10 years ago when, international equities were really in favor, very high demand, and it was a bit more difficult, to go access those markets.
To get exposure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you were mentioning banks and the overbought status of some of those, and I was going through this with a client yesterday that really banks are no more, as a sector, really no more overbought than the market. You know, the market, the S&P 500, the average S&P 500 stock, I should say, is about 34% overbought. And, you know, that's, you know, it's not a the highest you'll ever see, but it's, you know, it's certainly not a low number. It's a modestly overbought reading. And the average bank stock right now is 28% overbought. So that's, you know, we can call, amongst friends, we might call those numbers pretty similar. But the point is that, you know, you think about when those banks really started moving around the election and then obviously after the election, and you saw all those financials really move, it was all, you almost felt like you just didn't have a chance to get in. You know, if you weren't pretty early to pick up and see that movement of financials improving and Dolly and things like that, it felt like they just ran away from you. And this is really the first opportunity where you find that banks are really, they still have a lot of obviously great technical qualities, but they're also not any more overbought than just the market is as a whole.
Right. Well, and you know what? The other thing that's interesting, I think, about that is if you look at the relative strength chart, or excuse me, the weekly momentum for many of these bank stocks, they've been negative now for 8, 9, 10 weeks. Yeah. So that KRE, for instance, has had negative weekly momentum for 10 weeks. And that momentum tends to stay either positive or negative for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks on average. And that was saying that this sector, relative strength-wise, is strong, but it's just taking a little breather here. And that's that exact basing out period that we've seen for many of these stocks. And if you look at that overall and you say, what about the bank sector in general, in December, the 88% of the stocks in the bank sector had positive weekly momentum. By January, that had fallen to only 18% and then just reversed up this month. So what that's saying is we're seeing at least 6% of the stocks go from negative weekly momentum in the bank sector to positive. So it's saying, hey, they might be ready to pick up the pace here in the in this marathon.
Well, there's obviously there's, you know, there's a lot of positive characteristics for the market, and but there's, you know, there's always a question with markets hitting new highs, and you know, most major indices, if not hitting them, certainly around new highs on a daily basis, is, you know, what's there to suggest that there is further, you know, what's to make me feel comfortable that I'm not buying it exactly at the top. And we did do some research with that cash percentile rank and it getting down to zero. As we said, that's a fairly infrequent, you know, 3.5% of the time. But if you look at all of the days in which it was at zero, you do see that, you know, the 3-month returns following that event on average are pretty good. They're certainly better than, you know, the other 97 or 96.5% of the days. The average 3-month return, if you bought every time the cash percentile rank for U.S. equities was at 0%, your average 3-month return is 4%. And that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously
annualize that, right?
Sure. Annualize that. That's not bad for one quarter's worth of work. And then when you get out more like 12 months, it's pretty normalized. You know, it's about 8% on average, which is, to put that in perspective, is about the same as what you get if you bought every day that the cash percentile rank was below 33%. And, you know, that captures about 70% of the days out there. If you said every day when that cash percentile rank is basically what we call green light status, that's about 70% of the time. And, you know, again, you're projecting out, you're at about 8% annualized returns when you look at it at all of those days. So it's more on a short-term basis. You know, the evidence is that when you get down to 0%, it's more reflective of just a generally healthy market.
And then conversely, when that cash percentile rank gets up there and gets above the 50% mark, then that's a negative sign. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Then, you know, when you if you took every day that the cash percentile rank was above 50%, which is a little less than 30% of the time, going back to the end of 1999, then your average 3-month returns are negative. You know, they're down about 3%. And those, that's why, you know, when that light, when you use that Dolly tool and you're looking at the U.S. equity markets, when cash percentile rank gets up, you know, above 33, that light goes from green to yellow. And when it gets even higher and gets up towards 66%, that's when it turns red. And so those yellow and red periods, I mean, the reason that we visually want that to stimulate action or at least more evaluations, because we do know on average that's where bad things tend to happen in that area, because the market's telling you that, you know, a lot of the stuff you could own doesn't beat cash. And so you need to be much more selective.
And it's very similar to the PT chart. So if you looked at the percent of stocks that are in a positive trend, if that is above 50%, that's a good sign. Stocks in general are healthy. Mm-hmm. When you start falling below 50%, it means less than half the stocks are trending on I-85 North. And the last time we went below 50% was August of 2015. And then it got back above, got to the 50% mark in July of 2016. So we think of that period, if you had cut back in August of 2015 and then started getting back long again in July of 2016, you know what, you know, even though percentage-wise, I'm not sure exactly what that number is, but you think about that market, you would have missed those last tough couple of months of 2015, the first tough couple of months mm-hmm. of 2016, a lot of volatility in the market, and things started getting back on solid footing in July, when again everybody was scared to get invested because of the election, and I think people are still scared to get invested because of the election results.
Darn if you do, darn if you don't.
That's right. And there's always, I think it might be time, Paul, to bring out that chart of the Dow or the S&P where we show where there's always a crisis along the way. Even though the market keeps making these new tops, chart looks great, there's new crises that always come up. Right? Yeah. And it's just like there's crises when the market goes down. So if you make your investment decisions based upon whether there's a crisis going on, you're always going to find one. So that's not a good basis for making an investment decision.
Doesn't tend to be. No. But so that's why, fortunately, we try to rely a little less on headlines, a little more on something that's a bit grounded in actual prices and the direction things are actually going, not where we think they should be going, mm-hmm. based on the headline or who's building the wall somewhere or what have you.
That's right. So I think we should go have cake with lunch today. To celebrate all these anniversaries.
I don't understand how you just got to that. It just seems like you always want to have cake.
Well, that is true, too. I do like cake.
Okay, but so we'll use anniversaries, and that would suggest we would have a lot of cake this year because there have been a lot of anniversaries.
Hopefully
there will be a lot more.
Hopefully a lot more. A lot of good ones. So, all right. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. Y'all have a great day, and we'll be back with you next Wednesday.